Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. Once again, it's Russ Burlingame and Zach Roberts here for your 5 for 5. And in the spirit of the video store, we're going to be those assholes who snuck in 5 minutes after the store closed and then dropped everything in the Dropbox and said, you know what? Like, we're going to pretend like we returned that on time.
Yeah.
we kind of forgot that it was the 30th and not the 31st that we needed to do another 5 for 5. And I really didn't want to have the first one be late, because that's a bad pattern. We did that actually with the podcast. The very second episode was super late. Yeah. And it ended up being like months later that Zach and I finally were like, screw it, we're going to talk about Batman Superman. So, this is our opportunity to say, if you're on the West Coast, we're not late.
Yep.
Or if you're at one of the handful of blockbusters left, I think 8 in Alaska.
It's still open for at least a couple more weeks.
Well, no, that one isn't counted in the 8, apparently.
Oh.
The article that I was reading, the one you linked to,
yeah,
that there were 8 others besides the one that's going out of business.
Ah, okay.
So. All right, so if you didn't listen to our last episode, you don't know what we're doing here. Back at Emerald City Video, we had a 5 for 5 thing. We used to do these in the actual episodes with me and Dan and Logan and everybody. Now we've decided we're going to do them every 5 days as a standalone thing with kind of whoever wants to contribute. So far, it's just me and Zach. The idea was that you could get 5 older movies on VHS for $5 for 5 days. What we're doing with the segments is we're going to give you 5 recommendations, and then 5 days later, we're going to come back and do it all over again. Last time it went in like 45 minutes because me and Zach both talk. This time we're going to shoot for it to be significantly shorter, but we'll see how that goes.
Yep.
I think that last time I started, so Zach, do you want to start?
Sure. My first one, I guess I'll just get it right out of the way. Gene Wilder passed. And so my tie-in to that is Blazing Saddles. It's definitely my favorite film that I like watch consistently of his. I know that he's been in tons of probably better films, but again, I love this film. It's the ultimate. I think it's probably my favorite Mel Brooks film as well. It's got
no love for Life Stinks.
What's that?
No Love for Life Stinks.
I actually love Life Stinks. I remember seeing it in theaters. I still remember anytime I see an old guy with the lines, but on his neck.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone remembers that scene from the film, but he's just like, that's like, this was a sign. We're like, lines, it's not, it doesn't have too much more time or something like that.
Yeah, he's 11.
11s. Yeah, that's it. Damn. Weirdly, that came up in conversation a couple days ago. That's freaking weird. But anyway, Blazing Saddles. I don't know what's not to love about it. It's got great racial comedy in it. It's mocking. It mocks racists. It mocks, you know, the sexism of the old Western films. And the fact that it was, I forgot that it was this old, is 1974. Like, yeah. Some of the comedy that was in it, you're like, holy crap. Like, I can't believe that it was kind of that, you know, that on the nose. Because a lot of those films were still going on. I mean, I don't even think John Wayne was still, you know, he had just done his Vietnam film. Was it Green Berets or whatever it was? Yeah. It's timely. So that's my favorite one. And Russ, go ahead.
All right. I'm going to start with my Gene Wilder film. I thought about doing like a whole Gene Wilder theme thing, but as much as I really enjoy him as an actor, I don't have that deep emotional connection to him that a lot of people do. And so for me, like my 5 for 5 would have been like Willy Wonka and Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein. And it's kind of like, it feels like these are the movies everybody's already talking about.
Yeah.
The one that I really enjoyed that I haven't seen a lot of people talking about, except for weirdly Zach Braff, is The Frisco Kid. And in The Frisco Kid, it's weird because, of course, you know, he'd already done Blazing Saddles. And usually you don't, like, as an actor, when you do like get kind of that definitive parody, it's really hard to head back into that same genre, because if you do another comedy, it's going to be compared to Blazing Saddles. And if you do a drama, you've already kind of ruined that image for people in your head of you being in a serious version. The Frisco Kid kind of threads that needle. Like, it's kind of a dramedy before dramedy was a thing that people said. He stars in it with Harrison Ford, and he plays a and it's been years and years since I watched this, and I'm not looking at a synopsis for this one. Did I say Gene Hackman last time?
I think you said Wilder.
Okay.
You didn't say Hackman.
The two that I for some reason I do that all the time, so forgive me if I screwed that up. The character Wilder plays is a rabbi who is trying to get to San Francisco for his wedding, and he's kind of a dandy, and he ends up inadvertently paired up with Harrison Ford, who is a guy who tries to rob the train that he's on. And I think ultimately what it boils down to is that Ford is now broken on the run because the cops almost catch him. And then, you know, the conceit is that if he gets Wilder to his wedding on time, he's going to get some money or something. Like I said, it's been years, but I remember absolutely adoring this when I was a kid. And it's great performances by both, I almost said Hackman, by both Wilder and Ford. One of the things that's great in it is Harrison Ford's comedic performance. I mean, he's one of these guys who takes himself very seriously. He's been in all these big budget, big blockbuster movies. This was 1979, so it's sandwiched right between the Star Wars movies and the Indiana Jones movies. And so this was probably the last time you really saw Ford kind of not being the big draw of the movie and kind of making fun of himself. He's done a few comic things before, or things that have comic elements to them, but not really another comedy quite like this. So definitely check it out. Each of my five picks today, I have a little bit of fun trivia. This is one of the only ones that's not directly about the movie. In Hanky Panky, which is the movie where Gene Wilder actually met Gilda Radner, and it's directed by Sidney Poitier. So, yeah. Wilder played a character whose name was Michael Jordan. And I, when I was digging around through things, that made me laugh.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll go for my next one is, it's basically a, don't see this in theaters, rent this. I went to see War Dogs, and it was terrible. It was kind of, oh my God, I just had this conversation with you, Russ. That's the film I'm doing it, but it basically was the Wolf of Wall Street, bad, but about gun runners. So I recommend you go watch Lord of War, which isn't amazing. It's not like some spectacular, amazing film, but at least it's done better, and it has cooler shots, and like the opening sequence is still to this day insane. And you know, you care about the people a little bit more. So recommend. Jesus, sorry. Everyone take a hint. By Andrew Niccol. He wrote Truman Show. Nicolas Cage, of course, playing the gun runner, a Russian immigrant, living out on the, Coney Island area, running guns and then getting caught up in it. It's just like War Dogs, even though obviously War Dogs is based on a true story to an extent, I would suppose. But this one is just done so much better. It's done like a real film, and it's not done the way that War Dogs basically just tried to, like, everybody's having fun. No one's getting affected by anything. Oh, yeah. Then I got 7 months at home arrest, even though people literally fucking died because of my story. my God. Sorry about this. So now I'm completely lost after Shannon Moore is desperately trying to call me right now. Give it a rest, Shannon. Give it a rest.
Right, need deposit or?
No, I guess not. I mean, so, Lord of War, fantastic. Can't recommend it. Can't recommend it enough. It's also fun to watch. As much as you can kind of be fun to watch a film about, you know, gun running and everything like that. Definitely more so than War Dogs, which is kind of across the board, just terribly acted and terribly written. Just, you know, if you're doing your 5 for $5, make this one. It's only $1 as opposed to $15 like I paid for it at the theaters, you know. So
now I'm going to do a similar thing. You did the something of something.
Yeah.
I'm going to do State of Grace, which is one of these weird movies. Like, the cast is just unbelievable when you actually look at it in hindsight. The movie, the main character is Sean Penn, who, you know, plays this guy who comes back to Hell's Kitchen after a 10-year absence.
Yeah.
He and his, like, childhood friend are involved with the Irish mob. And along the way, he kind of rekindles an old relationship with his best friend's sister. You also have this weird thing where he's – it's a movie because it's like a neo-noir movie. Everybody's double-crossing everybody, and everybody's trying to kill everybody. And it's a hard movie to talk about without spoiling anything. And to me, the bottom line is it's a really well done film. It's a really well shot film. And like, if you just literally go down the cast, and it's like Sean Penn is in it, Ed Harris, Gary Oldman, Robin Wright, John Turturro, John C. Reilly, Burgess Meredith. And you're just like, yeah, that's, there's nobody in this movie who you don't want to watch. For fun little trivia, the thing that made me think of this, the thing that because I didn't know this before and I hadn't thought about this movie in about 10 years. I did an interview recently with Garth Ennis, who's a comic book writer. He did this comic called Hitman in the 90s, and now he's got a new book coming out called Six Pack and Dog Welder, Hard Traveling Heroes. And the bar from Hitman that this demon from hell called Beator works at, who, by the way, Beator, before Groot was ever I Am Groot all the time, Beator was I Am Beator! Or no, he didn't even say I am. He just says Beator all the time. But anyway, the bar that Beator works at is called Noonan's, which is the restaurant in Supergirl now, in spite of the fact that there's zero similarities between the two. But when I talked to Garth Ennis and I mentioned the Supergirl thing to him, he pointed out to me that Noonan's is, in fact, named after Sean Penn's character from State of Grace.
Nice. I don't know why that just made me think. Has anyone done a Silent Bob Groot crossover like T-shirt or something like that? I feel like
feel like it's kind of.
I feel like you know, Vin Diesel needs to do a, you know, like the end of what was it? Was it Chasing Amy? The end of Chasing Amy, where he has that, you know, sit down talk with the.
Yeah.
I mean, like, somebody needs to do that scene. Can we get Gunn on that? But anyway, so my next one is a completely off the wall. It's just a tie-in since the new Bridget Jones films is coming out, Bridget Jones Diary. It's a fun film. I can't say I've been forced to watch it by, you know, girlfriends in the past because I enjoy the film. I think everyone's really good in it. You know, Renee Zellweger, Colin Firth, Hugh Grant. That's a damn good cast. It's, you know, the film is what it is. I can't recommend it enough because it's just it's funny. And if you don't find it funny, then I don't know. I guess we won't agree on that because I find it funny. It's not something I'd fight over because I'm not passionate about it or anything like that. But again, like in a group of films, you know, I mean, like, I think it's a good comedy that, you know, has enough for everybody to like it. And if you haven't seen the film, the sequel, which I'm blanking on what it's called, is kind of meh. It's okay. And this one that's coming out in theaters doesn't necessarily look any better than the second one. The first one's quite good. So I'd recommend it quite a bit. So, yeah.
All right. So, and I'd agree with that. It's funny, that era of romantic comedy, there's a lot of things, and maybe it's because I was the right age and I saw some of those dates and I saw some of those in the right context and I was young and blah, blah, blah. But yeah. Like, Callie and I were looking through our Voodoo collection the other day and we saw, America's Sweethearts.
Yeah.
And very much like Bridget Jones's Diary. It's like a brainless, very simple, very, you know, romantic comedy, but it's hugely entertaining and really watchable. I remember just putting it on the background noise tons of times.
Yeah. I think it also, by the way, it's like, you know, American Sweetheart, you have a lot of the actors that were younger and doing kind of, I don't know, stupid romantic type comedy stuff, finally doing a little bit more adult stuff. If it adult, you know, not adult comedy sounds, or adult romantic comedy sounds kind of bad, but like, more adult situations where it's not like, oh, these guys are in their mid-20s playing teenagers or playing like they're or in their early 30s playing that they're in college sort of thing. No, this is just like, you know, which even though we were only, you know, 18, 19, 20 when this film came out, I still kind of always looked to like the next generation of age grouping of what I kind of like look to for cinema and stuff like that. So anyway.
All right. So my next film, Dogma. I think this is the first time that Kevin Smith has actually come up as a 5 for 5 pick or anything, although we've talked about him quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in college, I loved Kevin Smith movies. I don't watch them as much anymore, partially because I feel like a lot of them, it's not that they don't age well. It's that I'm just not in the same headspace I was in anymore when I was, you know, watching them all the time. And because I've watched them all so many times that I can basically recite the lines along with the characters, if you're not in the headspace, it's kind of eh.
Yeah.
Dogma was the one that I probably watched the most at the time when it was new and out, other than Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which you and I went and saw in theaters about 140 times.
Yep.
But, you know, it's a fun movie. It's his highest grossing movie. It's his kind of biggest crowd pleaser, so to speak, even though it got, you know, boycotted by the Catholic League and all that kind of stuff. It's a movie about a couple of fallen angels who find a loophole in Catholic dogma that's going to allow them to get back into heaven. But if they get back into heaven, it proves that God's word is not his bond, which means he's wrong. And if he's wrong, then the whole universe will literally fall apart. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are the angels, and they have to be stopped by getting into heaven. Or stopped from getting into heaven by Jay and Silent Bob, along with Chris Rock and that really angry lady from ER, and Alan Rickman. And God is played by Alanis Morissette, which is a ton of fun. If you're making a movie in the 90s, why not make Alanis Morissette God?
Yep.
My fun little bit of trivia for this one, if you watch the end of Kevin Smith's debut feature, Clerks, at the end of the credits, it says Jay and Silent Bob will return in Dogma. And it took him 5 years, and they appeared in two more movies between that, Mallrats and Chasing Amy.
Yep.
But eventually he was right.
God, it's insane to think that there was only 5 years between that span.
Yeah.
No, there had to be more than between Clerks and Dogma?
Probably. Well, between the theatrical release. Okay. It was 94 and 99. But... I mean, you figure the production time on Chasing Amy was a little bit of nothing. I think they shot it in like a month.
Wow.
And so,
damn.
Yeah. I mean, and part of it too, like Clerks was shot in 93 because if you actually, it's weird. I know kind of, I can't remember the date exactly. I think it's March something, but like the week that one of the scenes was shot is, you can tell because in the scene where the two of them fight and they trash the convenience store.
Yeah.
There's a magazine on the rack. That is from when Brandon Lee died.
Ah.
And so you can kind of like track the week that they shot that scene by being like, oh, when did Brandon Lee die? And then People Magazine had an issue the next week. You know?
Okay.
But that's way more Kevin Smith trivia than
hence going back to you've seen it so many times that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the same way with Kevin Smith films, even though still love them. It's like, actually, now that I think about it, I'm like, I can't remember the last time I've watched them. I guess they're also some of those films that I actually don't like. I haven't seen them in long enough time that I actually want to watch them. So yeah. I never put them on. It's like a lot of good TV shows. It's like West Wing. Like I would watch that basically anytime, anywhere, but it's something I actually want to sit down and watch. And 80% of my TV viewing is basically while I'm doing photo editing or doing research or something like that. So it's just over off on this screen over here, not really being paid attention to, which is why, like, you know, crap like Family Guy or good stuff like Rick and Morty or something like that, like, just get watched endlessly. But I will then jump to what is actually a fantastic cartoon. and kind of there's this new stop motion film out that made me think about it. My film recommendation is Princess Mononoke. And whether you see it in the dubbed version or the original Japanese version, I don't care. It's an incredibly amazingly well animated film. It's by
Hayao Miyazaki.
Thank you. and you can't really go wrong with him at all. It's my favorite film by him, even though Spirited Away is always kind of considered the greatest film of all time, you know, the greatest animated film of all time. I think it was on the BBC's top 100 list. This is probably the first I got to see this in its New York premiere with Claire Danes and, you know, and the voice cast of the American cast was there. So it might've been made it a little bit even better, but, it has.
Was I there with you or, cause that was at the Lincoln Center.
Yeah. Yeah. Not 100% sure.
I was there and I can't imagine that we were coincidentally there and didn't go together.
Pretty sure I saw it. It must have been a release. I'm trying to remember how I would have seen it then. But anyway, 97. I know I saw it in the theater, though. Anyway, I can't remember being 17 years old and being in New York. But anyway, it's Billy Crudup, Billy Bob Thornton, Minnie Driver, John DiMaggio, Claire Danes, Jada Pinkett Smith, I mean, Gillian Anderson. Just keep going through and kind of everybody from the 90s did a voice on this film. I think it's one of the films that really kind of brought anime to the kind of mainstream American public really immediately, and then suddenly like massive respect, and then it's just part of our, you know, part of our cinema culture now, as kind of just something normally that gets released. So highly, highly recommend it.
All right, now for me, the next one, and I've tried to keep these pretty light and pretty upbeat because I think that we're a movie podcast, and this is the week that Gene Wilder died. I think a lot of people are going to be kind of expecting like lighter fare because they're going to be bummed out by, you know, major star dying. This one here is like the one that makes me smile the most out of possibly the whole list, but it's a little bit of trek to get there. Zach and I went and saw this together back in February, Where to Invade Next, Michael Moore's most recent film. It is the most unapologetically earnest and like rah-rah patriotic movie that he's ever made. It takes you a while to kind of realize that and to get there. But it's a really well-made film. It's really well shot. I did double check, and Rick Rowley's credited as the cinematographer on this movie. And so I think this is his best film since at least Bowling for Columbine. And depending on kind of what you're looking for in a Michael Moore film, there's probably an argument to be made that this is his best film. I went and bought myself a copy on DVD at Family Video, which you can see photos of me posing outside the Family Video with it on the Emerald City Video Facebook page as Zach facepalms. which is what he was doing the whole time we were at the video store.
Pretty much embarrassingly, yes. As the poor girl at the checkout counter was like, oh, that's really, really interesting. She deserves like retail person of the year going, that's really interesting. You guys do a podcast about
My fun piece of trivia for this one, that footage of Michael Moore and his friend at the Berlin Wall is not the only time that Moore has headed to Germany to participate in little bits of pieces of history. In 1985, President Ronald Reagan was laying a wreath at the Wall of Remembrance for Nazi soldiers as part of like a goodwill tour of Germany. And Moore and a Jewish friend from Michigan, whose parents had been at Auschwitz, showed up, and as Reagan was doing his big symbolic gesture, they unfurled a banner that said, "We came from Michigan, USA, to remind you they killed my family." This got on CBS News and was just one of a number of kind of angry things that got directed at Reagan as a result of his, especially he didn't visit any of the sites of mass slaughter because he didn't want to upset the Germans. So it's like he visited Nazi graves, but not the concentration camps. It was a really weird political move, and more before he was a celebrity, became like a weird, you know, we call it like a news meme now because he was in it for like 5 minutes and then disappeared out of our consciousness until he made Roger and Me 4 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Bear. Reagan. Anyway, actually kind of fantastic tie into Ronald Reagan. My final, I guess it's my guy, just final, is Trading Places.
which, I knew you were going to do that one.
Yes, there's some issue with the, I can't believe that it's an actual thing, the frozen orange juice concentrate speculation. It's actually a thing. Wall Street Journal had a whole story about it, and I'm like, oh my God, Trading Places. And which I was really disappointed that if I was the journalist working on this story, I would not been able to not add at least a some level of a Mortimer and
yeah
quote from there. But yeah, Trading Places is a John Landis film. It's got Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd. It's definitely one of my top probably 50 favorite films of all time. Even more so than like a lot of the other 80s, early 90s Eddie Murphy comedies before he kind of completely lost his mind and started doing Family Fair or started getting into fat suits and crap like that. This one's about, it's basically a, I don't know if it's a Prince and the Pauper kind of idea, but it starts with a snobbish investor and a wily street con artist find their positions reversed as part of a bet by two callous millionaires. And it a lot of the characters end up reappearing in other Eddie Murphy films. So it's one of those that if you're a big Eddie Murphy fan and you haven't seen this one, watch it. It's also fantastic when you're looking at kind of films that are made about the economic collapses of different time, you know, the last 10 years or so. This film still holds up so well, and you're like, oh my God, this was made in 1983 and nothing has changed about our economic system. Everyone's still corrupt. And it was, you know, and somebody made a relatively popular film about it too. So no one had any excuses, but okay. And also, holy crap, Eddie Murphy was super freaking political.
That's weird.
And then he got into a fat suit and started doing things. And yeah, everything kind of went downhill from there. So,
fat suit.
What's that?
I said a never-ending string of fat suit movies.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, so that's my final recommendation. And that probably my favorite film out of all five I discussed. So,
all right. My final recommendation is going to be called The Big Empty. Now, there's like five movies called The Big Empty. The one that I'm talking about stars Jon Favreau, Joey Lauren Adams, Rachel Lee Cook. And it is a weird, weird little movie, and it's been a really long time since I watched it. So I'm going to just read the synopsis here and then give you a little bit of my context for it and a little piece of trivia. Struggling actor John Person, which is Jon Favreau, is hopelessly mired in debt. But things start to look up when he receives an offer from a strange man that could solve all his financial woes. All he has to do is deliver a blue suitcase to a cowboy in the small California desert town of Baker. Once there, however, John discovers he's part of a situation that's way over his head. This was kind of, there was a spate of kind of like zany over the top comedies that were coming out right around this time. Like, Big Trouble, which was an adaptation of a Dave Barry book, was another thing. It was kind of similar, because it dealt with terrorist themes. It got pulled from theaters and kind of didn't get its just, you know, its due. And then, you know, there was like a handful of these kind of really off the wall, Elmore Leonard inspired kind of crime comedy, blah, 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 blah movies. This one I remember at the time thinking was like my favorite of them. And again, that it might not age that well because you are talking about a movie from the late 90s and look, like you look at this cast and it's like, it's all people that I like, but it's all people who have the capacity to have very mediocre performances. So it's in my Vudu account. I got to rewatch it soon. And, it might actually be something that I subject everybody else to and try to do an Emerald City video episode. But not until we get past the one that we promised you we'd record a week and a half ago and have not. So there's that. But my fun piece of trivia about this one, which is pretty self-evident if you're thinking critically about this podcast, which is basically nobody, is that there are at least three people in this movie, Josie and the Pussycats, Rachel Lee Cook, Dazed and Confused, Joey Lauren Adams, and Suicide Squad's Adam Beach, who have been featured in previous Emerald City video reviews. Adam Beach was Slipknot. As I watched Zach, like, trying to remember who the hell he was. He's the random like First Nations actor who they made it a big deal for a couple of minutes that they were going to have him in the movie. And then when they realized they cut him down to like a minute and a half of screen time, they're like, yeah, that's not a publicity thing we're going to do.
Yep. Oh, well.
But yeah, so if you enjoyed, you know, any or all of your previous five picks and you still trust our judgment, you should check out some of these. One of the things I'd like to do, actually, is I got to set up an email account for the thing. And Zach, you and I could have this conversation sometime soon on camera, maybe. I want to kind of know if people are still renting. I actually got into a conversation on Twitter today with Aaron Covington, who was the co-writer of Creed. And he was talking about how back when video stores were a thing, he always used to rent, and now he doesn't anymore. And unlike me, you know, I said I feel the same way, but I buy a ton of stuff because the price point difference is fairly minimal and it's just not worth it to rent. But unlike me, he doesn't even buy digital movies. He just, like, doesn't consume media that way anymore. He basically streams everything. Yeah. And I feel like that's an interesting conversation that could be had that would be more than the couple of minutes we want to spend at the end of it, something that's probably already twice as long as we want.
Yeah. Yeah, most certainly. I mean, I know that not having the access, basically having my only place to buy physical media available to me is Target and Best Buy, I guess. And Best Buy is week by week, it seems, cutting their section down. Same thing with Target, seem to have just switched their entire display model relatively recently. And now it's just kind of buying stuff. I find that I'm actually, most of the stuff I'm buying is stuff that I already own that I can't find, or just kind of doing the Blu-ray upgrade now that people are like, it's $5 for a Blu-ray. Never mind the fact that it used to be $65, you know, like, but, and the medium hasn't changed and nothing about anything has changed, but we don't need to make that much money on them anymore. So,
well, because they need somebody to actually buy all the back stock they have now that they're buying physical media.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
I mean, but for me, I can't think of the last time I can think of the last time I bought a DVD, which was on my wife's birthday. We were walking around downtown Syracuse. We went to Soundground and I picked up season 4 of Lois and Clark because I needed it for work and it was under $10.
Yeah.
But in terms of like actually going to a store and buying a DVD, the last time I did it might have been Creed, which was like November, almost a year ago now. I mean, I have a handful of movies that I've gotten since then, but like because of my job, like I get them sent to me, and I'm not confident that I would actually buy them in physical form, other than maybe like Batman v Superman, if I wasn't already being handed those that physical form and just said, here, take it.
No, I mean, buying a physical copy of anything for me almost is now, it has to be kind of a statement. Like, I have to physically be, like, you know, it's like somewhere around I have a physical copy of The Big Short. Like, yeah. I love that film. Like, it's one of my, became one of my favorite films of all time. Hence previous episode, favorite was seven films of all time. I believe it was my number seven. Or it has to be a Criterion version or something like that, that actually has to, not that I even listen to the commentaries or anything like that, but just something that, you know, or like, you know, I mean, certain documentaries like Michael Moore, that I want, you know, at least I want like an actual, like, I physically bought this, because other than, I guess, doing like a screenshot or something like that, you can't like take a photo of it, or, you know, you can't do any of the kind of social media, like, kind of viral advertising that you hope will help the film or whatever. But you know, I mean, that's the same deal. Like, I'll often at the same time buy it digitally. If it doesn't come with a digital pack, because just whatever, you know, it's like, it's kind of at a certain point.
More or less how we watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I live even more so in the country and in the middle of nowhere than upstate New York, than Syracuse where Russ does. So my internet isn't nearly as good, but I guess we can obviously just have this conversation to this since we're having it. There's a Ank, one of the last physical rental stores in the country, we can say, but in the state of Alaska. I used to live there. The Blockbuster is closing at the end of the month or end of September, and I think that, like, a lot of people would go, why, you know, like, why would it possibly still be open? Well, rental stores actually exist quite a bit in Alaska still, because I don't know when a lot of media companies are going to freaking understand this, but because internet hasn't really, not that it hasn't reached there, but it's so unbelievably expensive. And that as a lot of companies, internet companies like Comcast or whatever, do bandwidth caps or charge via, you know, how much bandwidth you want, then renting is your only option. I mean, to sit down and watch an episode of, you know, an episode of Family Guy is going to cost you 500 megs at least to watch it on Netflix. I go, nah, I'm good. When I lived up in Alaska, I watched so much less media that I didn't own physically on disc, you know, it was actually kind of driving me mad, because I would actually have to physically buy I'd have to physically go to the store and physically buy these things to actually watch anything. Or if it was something that was on Netflix or on any of these streaming platforms, I'd have to really, really want to see it. And we could only watch it once because, you know, to watch something like, you know, a 2-hour film and to watch it in a high quality, that was going to cost me, you know, 2 gigs because I guess fuck compression rates at all. I guess Netflix, I figured out Netflix doesn't fucking know anything about compression, it seems. Because, like, if Family Guy, seriously, in the quality that I was watching it on my TV screen, was still 500 megs for a 22-minute long episode, then I don't know what the hell is going on. Like, they need Pied Piper in here. So, anyway.
All right. Well, we could talk more about that on a dedicated episode. We should probably wrap up, mostly because I want to get this onto YouTube and then recorded and then blah, 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 so that what I said at the beginning about if you're on the West Coast, technically the 30th can still be true. Yeah. Unless you have any final words, Zach?
Nope.
All right. Thank you to anybody who's listening for listening to the Emerald City Video Podcast. I did notice we picked up some new subscribers who aren't personal friends of mine, which is, you know, that's nice.
Yeah.
Hopefully my time on the Flash podcast, where I promoted this like 6 times, will help that a little. Forget my day job. I want to talk about video stores. So.
Yes. Save yet another dying medium. Video stores. Next, we're gonna start a Laserdisc podcast.
I'm sure somebody already has it.
I'm sure 8-track podcast is already done too. So, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some other esoteric mini-disc. Mini-disc, yes.
There you go. There you go.
I have them somewhere around here.
You gotta get something esoteric enough that not enough people have, like, not enough people have actually decided it's worth making.
Yeah, so. Exactly, yeah.
Which is, you know, always the goal, is to make sure that the people who could potentially listen to your show is small enough that there's no way to monetize it.
Exactly. Story of my life, man. Story of my life.
Seems like a good time to cut that.
No, anyway. So, anyway, have a good night.
You too. Good night.